live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hollits, Articles of News for the week of the 10th of October. It's me, Richie T, and Brother Kyle.
Ooh,
here
ooh
with
October 10th.
3 weeks till the Halloween.
I know.
Do you know what you're going to be yet?
I'm not going to be anything.
You don't do anything anymore?
No.
You got the kid, though?
I don't have the time, and he's too old. He doesn't do anything.
What do you mean you don't have the time?
When do I have time to make a costume,
well,
to build a
you
costume?
You can go to a costume rental place. It takes 10 minutes.
And how much money? That's a lot of time.
It's like $50. It's like, go to your parents and say, hey, I really want to do a costume with my son. Can I borrow $60? Or your mom. Your mom is all about the acting and stuff. She'll make you a costume. You could wear some of your mom's clothes. You could be your mom.
I could be my mom.
You could be your mom for Halloween. And then your son could be you. He could just bleach his skin and shave his head. And then he's you. And and you could have him have like a cup of water, and so like he keeps drinking it the entire night. He's like, I'm drowning, and then he could
water
all night. Yeah,
I thought you were gonna have him carry on like a gallon jug of water, like the dude at the gym.
Yeah, hey dude, I just want to make sure I stay hydrated. That's all, bro. I'm just hydrating. I'm taking lots of creatine. You gotta make sure you drink plenty of water, otherwise it can cause kidney stones. Isn't that what it is?
I think so.
Kidney stones?
I'm
not sure. Yeah. Be your mom. Be your mom for Halloween. Be a 6-week missionary.
I don't know if you can. You know, last year I did have a costume.
What did you do?
I was a costume. I went at it. What didn't make sense to anybody except at my work, and that's the only place I dressed up.
Okay.
Because they encourage us to
dress
up.
Yeah, so that's fine. So then you do it for, you know, your audience. So what were you?
Yeah. I was what we call we hire a seasonal employment group of about 60 people.
Okay.
For about 90 days. No,
okay.
Not that far.
Maybe
a month.
Like the Christmas rush, right?
Yeah, for our big holiday season.
Uh-huh.
And they're horrible, horrible people.
Okay. Like in character,
and they
or
all,
lazy?
They all
or?
Look alike. Yeah,
okay.
They're lazy. They love to smoke. They love to vape. They all dress alike. They all look alike. And uh-huh. So I put some fake tats on. I put a big beard on. I wore flannel. And I had a pack of cigarettes.
That's awesome.
And I walked around saying the F word a lot to everybody.
Nice.
And high-fiving them.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. And everybody got it. Well, about a third of our employment staff got it and got a big kick out of it. And the rest are like, ooh, what's he doing?
Deal?
You look good today.
Yeah. Hey, you want to come eat lunch with us today, bro? what's your kid going to be?
He'll probably be nothing.
Your kid isn't he? He's the prime of doing stuff.
No, he just exited that phase.
Yeah. So what was he last year?
I don't know if he.
Bad dad. What was he the year before?
I can't remember.
What has he been ever?
Clown.
Okay. How long ago was that? That's got to be
within the last 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, mean clown.
Okay, like scary clown.
Yeah, which he's not going to be this year.
Yeah, no.
Because
you want your kid to live. That's why.
Yeah. Yep. All the kids are scared of clowns now, which I don't like.
Don't like clowns? Is that what you mean? Is that what you mean by that? You don't like clowns?
No, I like clowns, and that's what I think is sad is this whole clown thing.
They're just getting a bad rap, that's all.
Exactly.
And you know what you're going to find out? It's totally the production house for the movie It. That's why they started it. They started it nice in advance. I'm not the one that came up with that theory. There have been several others, but I'll repeat it.
I just thought it was somebody having a prank, and it's got out of hand.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But that's good.
It's the movie house. They're scared of clowns, and then it'll get worse and worse and worse, and then someone will accidentally get shot and killed, and then it'll be like, sorry.
Yeah. My son's school, everybody's scared of clowns right now.
Right.
At my son's school, somebody spray painted on, when was this, Friday?
Uh-huh.
Thursday or Friday, spray painted on the exterior and interior of the school, all kinds of things, you know, we'll have the last laugh, we're coming to kill you, fake clowns beware, all this stuff all over the school.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of this from him is real and how much is not, but then all day at school text me, Dad, I don't feel safe. I want to get checked out. There's kids checking out of school all over the place. Everybody's leaving.
He's smart.
I know.
So
60
smart.
60 kids left.
Ended but that's so smart. Dad, I don't feel safe. Totally playing up on that.
I know.
You know what you do? You tell them to just get down. Don't try and be a hero, son. You run, you hide.
When you hear the shots, just get down. That's all I can tell you.
Yep.
Busy at work, but when you hear the shots, just get down.
Yeah. Can't come get you. Can't check you out. Stay down.
Heart emoji.
Yeah. All right. I say this obviously sarcastically. If he genuinely felt unsafe, I mean, I was that kid in elementary school. I guess kind of late elementary, early junior high. Like, I worried about everything. It was because that was when my parents were getting divorced. And I had this huge death thing. Like, I thought I was going to die, or that, like, I'd go to school and everyone would die while I was at school.
Mm.
And so I would make myself sick. Physically sick to the point that I had to come home.
Oh, yeah.
And my grandma, who has since passed away, she... You know, after they came and got me, like, the fifth day and 10 days at school, she's like, what's going on? And I'm like, well, nothing. I don't feel well. And she's like, no, come on. She had a really great way of just kind of, you know, beating around the bush and just going straight for it. And I was like, well, you know, I'm afraid that everyone's going to die and, you know, that there's going to be. And she's like. And I'll never forget. She's like, well, that's stupid. and honestly, it wasn't until she said, well, that's stupid. And I was like, well, yeah, you're right. That is dumb. That I couldn't get past it. But she's like, you know, we love you. If something were to happen to someone, it doesn't mean that they don't love you or that they don't want to be with you. But, you know, life happens. So stop worrying about it. Never came home from school again from being sick. Well, that's stupid. Best lady ever.
Snapped you right out of it.
It was great.
Good for her.
She passed away. Not this last week, so maybe I shouldn't bring it up.
Wait, this last week?
No, not this last week. You know, because this is the opening exercise where we talk about what's new in the last week. Anything else new for you?
I just got back. I was gone last week, so I couldn't join you. I was on holiday in Southern California.
Went to the beach with the kid, without the kid?
Without the kid. I went to do a race.
How'd you do?
Triathlon.
Oh, you got your butt kicked.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw that. You posted something about getting your butt kicked. Like, hey, this guy should come here and win. Nope, you got it handed to you.
Yeah, on a platter.
What was the deal?
Well, I didn't realize what a big deal this triathlon was. There was 1,400 people entered.
That's a lot, yeah?
That's a lot of people.
Okay.
So that they reach their maximum.
How many are in triathlons typically?
Around here, a smaller one will have 200, an average one will have 400 or 500.
Oh, so this is like triple. So this is really big.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, much bigger, and much bigger than they planned on.
Okay. So way bigger than you thought.
Yeah.
But still, you're pretty fast, so I would think it wouldn't matter, right? Because you get a lot of the people who are like, it's my New Year's resolution to do a triathlon, and they're keeping the water warm in the back.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your deal?
That along with three... times the normal people were three times the normal people that are in it,
like, you know, elites,
even though they're over the hill or this isn't their real job, that are in there and will kill somebody to win.
Really?
You know, like me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had it handed to me.
What place?
I don't even want to say, 21st.
Wow. And you're normally top five, right?
Yeah.
I mean, without any sort of question.
Yeah.
21st?
Yes.
How was your performance?
Two out of three were good. I was right up there in the top five, and then my swim was awful.
You need to work a little harder.
I can't swim. I couldn't swim in the... Maybe the ocean was throwing me off.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. I think all the other guys in the top 10 looked at me and, well, this guy had the fastest bike and had a really good... What did he have on? Waders and floatable thing around his waist?
What, was he hauling a kayak on this thing?
Yeah.
Really, that bad?
That much slower. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I hope that Ether teaches you the lesson that your weak things can be made strong, and that when you go back there next year, you show them who's boss.
I don't know if I'll go back next year.
Oh, so you're going to let it win? Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Real cool.
Good enough.
Yep.
No, it was really expensive.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right, how much are those things?
This one, it was a short sprint.
Okay.
So not very long. You know, it took me, I had my fastest time ever.
Yeah.
I did it in 56 minutes.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
The swim, the bike, and the run?
Uh-huh.
So what are distances
two,
here then?
2 minutes faster than I usually do.
Okay, but what are the distances here?
500 meter swim.
Okay. That's like 10 lengths of a pool, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a 20K bike, so about 12 miles.
Okay.
And then a 5K run.
Yeah.
3.1 miles.
You can't swim 500 meters?
Any faster than I did?
Yeah.
I would have thought, but no.
You got it. I think you need redemption.
There's jellyfish. There's sharks. There's whales.
I would think that would make you swim faster.
I think it just freaked me out. Yeah. Got me down.
21st.
And I know.
Unacceptable.
I know. Fourth and age, 21st overall, and I just left in disgust. Not before I was accosted by a homeless meth head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which, strangely enough, then you were able to be chased by that guy, jump in the water, and swim twice as fast. But whatever, that's fine. I can't believe you're going to let it win.
Well, it's just because afterwards I thought
Wait, did you tell me how much it cost?
No, it was $135.
That's not that much.
What?
That's not that much. Like marathons and stuff like that here are like $90 or $100.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Do you know how much a bike race is? It's like $40.
Yeah. That's not $40 to $130 is not that much different. I mean, it's
like
three
$100 difference.
Yeah, it's three times different, but I mean,
not to
when
mention
you say
driving 11 hours.
Yeah, but when you
three
say expensive,
nights in a condo
I'm thinking,
on the beach.
Okay, so all the surrounding stuff is expensive, but not the actual event itself.
The event was more expensive than usually for that event. A similar event here in Utah, even a big one, mm-hmm. you would maybe pay half that.
Hmm. Okay.
So you add up 1,400 people. That's the other thing that makes me mad, how much money they made.
Yeah.
And you don't get anything at the end.
No.
And then the homeless woman took all the food, so there wasn't enough for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
Took all the food?
Yeah. She went up. She found a medal somewhere, stole a medal.
Uh-huh.
She has it down. Somebody told me later she has this down.
Uh-huh.
She's a local meth head.
Oh, jeez.
Tracks all up and down her arms or whatever.
That's unfortunate.
I know. She's one of a Heavenly Father's daughters. No, she's not. She's a meth head on the beach.
She's
sorry.
I'll contend. She's one of Heavenly Father's daughters. But
And she has a thing she knows how to put on. She goes down to this big park by the beach, and mm-hmm. when events go on,
mm-hmm.
like this, she knows, she finds a medal, steals one,
okay,
puts it around her neck, and walks around like she's finished an event, and they always have free food for you.
Sure.
And stuff and candy and all kinds of things. And she took a small box and went up the table with her arm and scooped everything into
the
box. Did
the little sweep thing, huh?
I looked at that and went... That's weird.
Yeah, that's
a
bizarre
And then I saw
thing.
Her arm that she swept around with. I went, that's really weird.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at her and I went, that's really weird.
You know the strangest part about the whole thing, though? She still beat you in the swim. shoot. So let me tell you this. I'm excited. Tonight is game three of the Chicago Cubs San Francisco Giants.
Who won it last night? I saw that
they didn't play yesterday. Texas beat hold on. Give me a second. Texas is playing the Blue Jays and Blue Jays won. So the Blue Jays are moving on to the next round, and it's Boston and Cleveland. They still have to play. Dodgers and Nationals still have to play and decided. And the Cubs and the Giants. Tonight's game three. I got together. I don't do this very often, but I got together a group of people to watch game one. We went to a Buffalo Wild Wings because they got all the TVs, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got crap on the wall and TVs on the wall. And it's a place where you can yell and, you know, eat terrible food. Food was terrible. Terrible
yeah.
food.
I had an experience at Buffalo Wild Wings
yeah, it was,
with my son.
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
The mac and cheese I had was fine. Everything else was just awful. But how can you ruin mac and cheese? Anyway, so I put it out on the social media and said, hey, if anybody wants to come join me at this, the Buffalo Wild Wings at this time, I'm going to be watching the game, right? Open invitation. On my Facebook page, I have people who are friends of mine because they listen to the radio show that I work on. Former like mission friends, college friends, high school friends. I have some elementary and middle school friends. I have some people that I've worked with. Just I guess I go through all this because it's a random hodgepodge of people, right? Family, all that stuff. But I accept everyone, whether or not I really know them. Or not. And in fact, some of the people that are my friends on Facebook just know me from the cultural hall. So when people started showing up and telling me, hey, I'm here, like I had to start being like, where do I know you from? Come and sit with us. You bet. All inclusive. Hop under the umbrella here. But I don't really know how I know you. And maybe you and, you know, have we ever met before? And come and sit. And so it was a
how
funny thing.
How many people showed up?
There was a dozen or so. 12, 14.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of a fun thing to be like, hey, this is... And that meet, it was great. I loved it.
But it was good. It ended up so much fun.
So much fun to be kind of excited about a sporting thing. That's not typically me.
Are the people that showed up, were they the same kind of fan as you, excited about the club?
You know, I think that most of the people that were there were just excited to be a part of something. You know what I'm saying?
So they're just lonely and wanted something to do that night.
I don't know. Lonely, no. But just like, hey, this is a thing. I'll do this thing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, maybe more bored, not necessarily lonely.
Yeah.
Like, well, there are people watching a game. I can get in a game. Sure. Let's go watch it. It was cool. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's exciting. Anything else that could be exciting? No, not really.
Hmm.
Not too much. I was going to try and find an email that I got that I wanted to share. Let me see if I can find it. This is from Michelle. Says, I just wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed the interview with Isaac Halasima. This is episode 218 of the Cultural Hall. I previously listened to the other interview that you mentioned when you interviewed him, and I was very intrigued. When the Nutty Putty Cave situation happened, I was going through my own personal tragedy and missed all the news stories. As I first listened to the story, I thought it was just like all those other tragedy stories that were out there, but your interview and the other interview made this movie and story intriguing to me. I researched the story and information about the cave, and I couldn't seem to let it go. I mentioned the story to a girlfriend of mine who was also intrigued, and we went to see the movie last week. I was thrilled by the movie in all its aspects. I knew going in that it wasn't a happy story. And then in parentheses says, but I watched the movie Charlie, and I had read that book and the sequel Sam, and knew the sadness of that one too. But I wanted to see how Isaac took this tragedy, told the story, and made it different from other stories of its kind. I think he did a great job of telling the harrowing story, the backstory of him and his wife, and lastly, the ending of the movie. The ending was so different, and even though the film touched on it from the beginning to from the opening to dialogue during the film, I was still surprised by the end. It was also very touching. Thank you for the interview with Isaac, and as always, everything you do. This listener has missed you over the last few weeks when you've been sick and been traveling. I'm glad your health is better. I'm still trying.
I can hear it.
And that you've been able to have fun. Are you still running? She asks. I haven't seen any updates. That was the thing that I did. She says, your joyous listener, Michelle. So, thank you, Michelle. You can always get in touch with us, contact@theculturalhall.com, or just go to theculturalhall.com, and there's a little Contact Us tab. You can get in touch with us that way. We'll take a break for just a second. We'll come back, and we'll do actual articles of news.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails from people all the time. Here's one. Dear Dan, I hear your talk about a lifetime service guarantee. Free? Really? Please help me avoid all your fine print and be honest about what free means. You understand that we should be very wary of a free offer? Signed, Skeptical. Hi, Skeptical. I remember 22 years ago when we started PC Laptops and our lifetime service guarantee. People thought it was too good to be true. Well, you know, after a decade, people started believing me a little bit. But you know, it's been 22 years of having the privilege to serve our friends and neighbors like you. Our lifetime service guarantee has become the most trusted warranty in the industry. You can get a brand new PC laptops desktop computer for $799 with a lifetime warranty. Check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Here's to seeing you soon, skeptical.
It's time for the second half of the Articles of News for the Cultural Hall. Hit it, Peter.
You can't lose Articles of News.
All right. I want to go ahead and start. I've got short ones today.
And I have long ones, so it's a perfect match.
You can find this link if you follow us on the Facebook, Cultural Hall. The Cultural Hall, as you can find us, at The Cultural Hall, if you want to search it that way.
I do it.
Have you seen this Cosmo dancing with the Cougarettes? The
video? I watched it for about 5 seconds.
It's great. My contention is that Cosmo, the person inside, is a woman. Not that it matters, but I'm pretty sure. I think that normally Cosmo is a gentleman.
Yeah.
But I think for the purposes of that video, I think that Cosmo is a woman.
Like at halftime, they went in, somebody else threw on the costume, went out, did that, and then
more than one costume.
Out.
More than one costume.
Oh, yeah.
They Mickey Mouse that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you hide in here, then we'll switch it out. But the only thing that makes me think maybe not, that Cosmo is tall. Not that women can't be tall, but that would have to be a pretty tall woman, unless it's forced perspective in the video. All this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman at all, but that's where my mind goes. I wonder if that's a man or woman. To whoever it is, whomever, male, female, really cool. If you haven't checked that out, you can find it at theculturalhall.com or on our Facebook page, The Cultural Hall. So that's there.
It's gone really big virally.
Yeah. Lots of views. Lots of views. The kids are loving it. This, for the first time ever, a huge collection of dozens of LDS artists are all in one place. It's at Anthony's Fine Arts in downtown Salt Lake. They sent out the announcement earlier this year. 300 entries were given. 77 of the best are shown in the gallery. Micah Christensen says, we're exhibiting the results of the first ever Zion Art Competition. It's a nonprofit that was founded earlier this year in order to promote the works of a diverse output of LDS artists that are working today, professional LDS artists. The exhibit opened last weekend and only runs through the 15th of October, so I think that's Friday or Saturday. You can go and check it out Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Anthony's Fine Arts, if you're here in Salt Lake. Go ahead.
There is a new name for the Scout Ranch, the Hinckley Scout Ranch.
This is up at East Fork of the Bear, if you ever went up there. That's like Camp Frontier and Evergreen.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Which one did you go to as a kid?
I don't remember, even.
Yeah?
It's been so long ago, I have no idea.
It was barely even a scout camp back then, but those are the ones that you went to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to several of them. President Henry B. Eyring, first counselor in the first presidency, was in chilly northern Utah October 5th to dedicate the Thomas S. Monson Lodge at the Hinckley Scout Ranch.
Hinckley, Monson,
The multi-story, 18,000-square-foot building becomes the crown jewel of the popular camp and will be utilized to train, host, and entertain Legion of Youth and their leaders. Many scout leaders and several church officials and general authorities joined him at the event.
You're Eagle Scout, right?
I am an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, I'm not. Made it as far as star, but just like to point that out every once in a while. Yeah, you have to get it by 18.
Oh, that's right. You just like to point it out to make me feel better about the whole mission thing. Kyle has something.
Yeah.
Here in the hall.
Yeah.
He's the one Eagle Scout holder.
Yeah, I don't think any of the rest of us are, right?
No.
I can't think of anyone who is. Maybe Britt, who joined me on Articles of News last week.
Oh, yeah.
He strikes me as maybe an Eagle Scout. But I don't think Rob is, DJ Rob. Certainly none of the girls.
They can't do anything. Is that why none of them are here anymore? Because they're all mad about the whole priesthood thing?
Yeah. Yes. Perpetuate that. That's a great idea. No, Janae and I was going to join us today.
Oh, really?
She texted me yesterday, said, hey, what time tomorrow? And we communicated back and forth. And then she texted me later and was like, oh, hey, I got a doctor's appointment at noon. Sorry. I was like, oh, all right. Well, I guess I'll have to be here with just Brother Kyle then.
Great. Not again.
Ugh.
Here go the ratings. The high-tech lodge features a grand entrance, a large kitchen, a scoutmaster training room, a trading post, and the King Hussein room.
What is that?
It's a grand ballroom which will be used for banquets and training events. Outside the lodge are the new Court of Honor Plaza and an amphitheater with seating for 800 people.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I know.
Are there pictures with that story?
I didn't have any pictures.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. Maybe I'll put a link of that at theculturalhall.com so you can check that out. That sounds pretty rad.
Yeah, that's a big place.
That's a big place.
That's a big place there.
You remember Ammon Bundy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, a federal prosecutor, and this is just a quick update, federal prosecutor spent little more than 15 minutes cross-examining Ammon Bundy, who for the last 3 days has been testifying in his defense in the trial of seven people accused of occupying the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. In a series of rapid-fire questions, Assistant U.S. Attorney Ethan Knight asked Bundy about his leadership of the occupation, his view on public lands, and the presence of firearms on the refuge. Knight began by asking Bundy if he was the leader of the occupation. Bundy said no. Knight pointed to earlier testimony in which Bundy referred to himself as sort of the leader. Bundy then clarified by saying that he teaches the people principles and then he lets them govern themselves. Jeez. Knight also asked Bundy if he had a $530,000 federal loan backed by the Small Business Administration to support his fleet management business. Regarding the loan, Bundy responded, "I'm not sure that's allowed by the Constitution." Anyway, basically, I just wanted to give an update that this is on trial right now up in Oregon. Ammon Bundy and all the folks that were that took that federal refuge. That occupied that federal refuge. At the end of the day's session, U.S. District Court Judge Anna Brown suggested to the defense, that is Ammon Bundy's defense, that they bring a more streamlined case to the jury when they return Tuesday. You're going to lose them, Brown said of the jury to the defense. What we did with Mr. Bundy took too long. So,
is he still a card-carrying member?
The church? I think so.
Active? Or I should maybe say active.
I mean, I think as active as he can be. I can't remember if they're holding him, if he has to be held in jail or not. But I think so. And I think in cases like that, like, I don't know. I think that when you're on trial, you essentially can't have responsibilities. Right? Like any calling, stuff like that. And then if you're convicted, I think is when they go, hey, you're convicted. If you are found to be innocent, then they don't.
So if you're found guilty of a crime, they X you?
I don't know if they X you, but that's when discipline occurs. Because you can't be a member in good standing and be, you know, have a misdemeanor against you or a felony. Hmm. Maybe a felony? What an excellent question. I know for sure a felony, but I don't know about a misdemeanor, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, being honest with your fellow men takes a lot of felonies, or, like, murder or kid touching and any of that stuff. I mean,
felonies are big, but I wonder on a misdemeanor what level they would take
any action.
Right, because,
like,
a
misdemeanor for, like, driving, you know, you can get a misdemeanor like, some sort of accident or something like that. That wouldn't be...
Yeah.
You wouldn't be... Maybe it's conditional, each one. Hmm. That is an excellent question.
I would assume it goes before the state council.
Right. Well, yeah, because once you're convicted, right, then they know and they can say, hey, we're going to convene a disciplinary council and talk about this. That would be probably how it would go, I bet. But not for all misdemeanors, right? Can't be a blanket thing because, again, I think they'd be like, what, I'm in here because of a parking violation that I didn't pay? Or maybe they would. Good question.
Or if you protested up at the Capitol and locked hands with somebody and they drug you off and arrested you for the day and you were found guilty and you paid $250. I'm not saying it's happened to me. I'm just saying.
No. Yeah, just in general, right?
Yeah.
You know what I should do? I should do like what Kate Kelly did and I should go to WikiLeaks so that I can read the Church Handbook of Instructions. That was a segue to the next story.
Oh.
says, Mormon rebel... That's Kate Kelly.
Mormon rebel.
She went to WikiLeaks for help. When Kate Kelly, founder of the Mormon feminist group Ordained Women, was accused of apostasy, she couldn't readily access the Church Handbook of Instructions, Volume 1, for the definition, so Kelly and Nadine Hansen, a lawyer representing her in her hearings, had to turn elsewhere. The only way that women can access that volume is by accessing it online at WikiLeaks. Kelly told the Daily Beast. Before church insiders began leaking Latter-day Saint videos and documents through the so-called Mormon leaks, WikiLeaks was an unlikely ally for church members looking for ease of access to restricted texts. And while the online organization's religious troublemaking is best known for its expose of Scientology, it also revealed previously unavailable documents from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Fellowship of Friends, and other organizations. The Mormon Church didn't take the leaks quietly. They tried to fight distribution by claiming copyright infringement. WikiLeaks will not remove the handbooks, which are of substantial interest to current and former Mormons, a representative of the group said at the time. It's frankly annoying, as a woman, to be told in a patronizing fashion that I'm not allowed to see and read the church handbook of instructions for myself, but that it has to be interpreted for me by a male priesthood holder, a woman identifying herself as the original source posted. Anyway, so then it goes on to talk about Kelly's church troubles and how she advocated for women's ordination and then how she was excommunicated and so on. Kelly was excommunicated, didn't win her appeals. In a letter about her excommunication, Kelly's bishop wrote that she was being punished for conduct contrary to the laws and order of the church. Quote, "The difficulty, Sister Kelly, is not that you have questions or even that you believe that women should receive the priesthood," Mark Harrison wrote. "The problem is that you have persisted in an aggressive effort to persuade other church members to your point of view and that your course of action has threatened to erode the faith of others." But interesting that she had to go to WikiLeaks. That's the point of the story. Hmm. She had to go to WikiLeaks to read the church handbook of instructions. This, a tragedy. Federal air crash investigators say that a pilot's lack of familiarity with his plane's fuel system and pilot error contributed to a 2015 propeller plane crash near Eaton that left two Kansas men dead. The NTSB said in a report released last week that the pilot lost control in gusting wind and crashed because of the error. This gentleman, whose name is Jared Langston of Holy Rood, Kansas, a happily married man and father to two boys. Langston served in the church in many capacities, including Elders Quorum President and Young Men's President. The passenger, as identified as 41-year-old Benjamin Bates of Lyons, Kansas, for about the 2 years prior to the crash, he served as the bishop of the Great Bend Ward. He owned Westcrete Incorporated, a cement contracting company that specializes in commercial-sized structures for the agricultural industry, such as large chicken coops. So they do cement for large chicken coops. Bates was working on a construction project about 2 miles east of Platteville when their plane crashed. So that's sad. We had reported that that original plane crash, but that's just sort of an update on all that.
This is a story from last week. You spoke about the leaked videotape.
Yeah, the 7.5 hours of boring. There's about 20 minutes of that's interesting.
Yeah.
Another fact that we didn't talk about at the time, in addition to what you were just about to tell us about, they say 25% of single LDS folks are active.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
25% of single LDS folks are active.
I think I saw that in another story. I hadn't read all the way through it yet.
One
of four. That was one of the things that they addressed. Was
that. So you take four LDS folks, one of those are active.
I believe that.
Yeah. Because it's hard.
Yeah.
Go ahead with your story.
Fine. I know. We can attest to that. So good for us.
Yeah. We're 2 of 4.
Bucking the trend.
Yeah, buck you, trend.
This is entitled Mormon Video Spur Question. Should aging LDS apostles be able to retire? The recently leaked videos of Mormon authorities discussing sometimes thorny issues behind closed doors expose no stunning secrets or unexpected statistics, but they did provide stark visual verification of what believers have long known about their faith's top leaders. They are mostly older, white, and male. Some wonder if an LDS church president could resign his office the way Pope Benedict did.
That's 16th.
And hand the leadership to a younger, more vibrant man. Could the church institute a mandatory age, say 85, at which apostles would be granted emeritus status, as it began doing in 1978? It's a long story, but I read in here where it's not doctrine that they have to stay in the
that they have to stay in it the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And so it's not doctrine.
Correct.
Hmm.
So that they can leave. It's never been a church doctrine that they have to, you know, be in any specific order, that they have to stay in any specific amount of time.
Yeah. So then knowing that that's the truth, and if someone knows that to be contrary, please send us an email, contact@theculturalhall.com. So like at General Conference, President Monson, you know, not in super great health, spoke briefly in the meetings, right? Didn't speak very long. I'm not trying to utz him out, but is there a thing about because when I, so this came up in my lesson in Sunday school yesterday. I wasn't teaching, but the teacher said, and I've heard this quite a bit, where, you know, if God doesn't want his prophet or his apostle to be there, he'll take care of it, right? Essentially saying, you know, God's in control of who lives and who dies, and knows that it's going to be, you know, President Monson until he passes away. So if it's not supposed to be President Monson anymore, essentially the leap then is that God will call him home, right?
Yeah.
But I know, and I think it's Spencer W. Kimball. If it's not Spencer W. Kimball, it was the last part of Spencer W. Kimball. His health was really bad, really, really bad. And so a lot of the other apostles and stuff like that had to essentially take over that role and leadership for the church. So it is interesting to me that we don't just go, hey, you know, let the guy retire.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I definitely think so. I mean, they it mentions here where they service until death is a tradition, but not a scripturally based doctrine. Prince writes in a book that is slated to be published in the fall edition, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Although the tradition has remained in place for nearly two centuries, it was abandoned after nearly a century and a half for the 70.
Yeah. Yeah, so the appeal that, or not the appeal, but the what the discussion is, well, we used to not do it for the 70, and we do it now, and it suited us for the 70, so why not for these other folks? And not forced. I don't think it should ever be a forced thing, like,
sure,
you're 85 now, you're done. But, you know, if President Monson can say, hey, you know what, guys, I'm not feeling real great, or you know what I'm saying, or
yeah,
like, hey, I recognize that this would be better suited, or can be inspired by God to be like, hey, you know what, you've done what you need to do.
Or can, you know, as they get older, they get some form of dementia, would they not bow out maybe when they need to?
Right.
Or could that even happen? Could it get to the point where, you know, the other general authorities would think otherwise of somebody that maybe is not in a capacity to hold that?
Or do they just kind of, they kind of, you know, I mean, everybody lifts where they're, what is that saying? Lifts where they're planted? That's not the right phrase. But like, you know, so say the prophet, or say President Eyring or someone, right? His health isn't good. Everyone else would step in and be able to help out.
Yeah.
But, you know, is it getting to the point where the church is big enough where everyone needs to be in an operational kind of way? Right?
And like, who was it? I just forgot his name. I know it was recent, that their son came in and said, my dad is not well and he's not fit to run the church right now.
I don't know.
His health is bad and his mental state is not all there.
Hmm.
And it was a big deal because he said, I don't think it should be run the church. This is wrong.
Huh.
This prophet died within 6 months of him coming out and saying that.
Really?
I just can't remember.
President Hunter? What would it have been?
I don't think it was. I think it was just before that.
So, President Benson. President Kimball?
No, it wasn't that far back.
Okay.
It might have been Hunter.
Well, it goes Kimball, Benson,
yeah,
Hunter.
It would have been Benson or Hunter.
Hinckley, Monson. Pretty good.
That is
it's
good.
It's before Kimball that I start to get a little shaky. I go, what?
And one other thing I thought interesting, the story, and this is just from the person writing the story that said, where are the women? The lack of participants in the videos proved a powerful reminder that they need to push more for female involvement at that level. And bringing women into the conversation about how to shape LDS policies is not only the right thing to do, but studies also show it's more effective. When you have three or more women on a corporate board, she says decisions change and profitability rises. It's not a business, but...
But there are aspects of a business that it absolutely is.
Yes, exactly.
I would be interested, you know, one of the things when we talked about the videos last week, we pointed out that the videos were between 5 and 10 years old. I would be interested to see what these meetings look like now. I know that the pessimistic people would say, oh, yeah, but they're still like this. But I would venture to guess, I would hope to guess, that there are more women that are involved in these meetings now than there were even just 5 years ago. Mm,
yeah.
Something to think about. I've got this story for you. Did you watch the debates last night? Donald Trump?
No, I couldn't take it anymore.
Deseret News usually sits on the sidelines of presidential politics. In fact, that's been the case for the last 80 years. The last time they endorsed candidate was the guy who lost to Roosevelt back in the 30s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The Utah-based newspaper, that is the Deseret News, which is published by and is to a certain extent a mouthpiece of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, has now said, we are neutral on matters of partisan politics. However, we do feel a duty to speak clearly on issues that affect the well-being and morals of the nation. Accordingly, today we call on Donald Trump to step down from his pursuit of the American presidency. The Deseret News wrote, the editors grant that presidential candidates are human and that everyone makes mistakes. They admit that what is expressed in an unguarded moment of conversation should not be the full measure of the individual, and they emphasize the need for forgiveness, compassion, and a second chance. Nevertheless, they believe the release Friday of a video in which Trump was caught on a microphone in 2005 talking lewdly about hitting on and seducing women, some married, told a larger story about Trump's character. Quote, the most recent revelations of Trump's lewdness disturb us not only because of his vulgar objectification of women, but also because they poignantly confirm Trump's inability to self-govern. The newspaper's unendorsement could create some problems for Trump in Utah. He's not popular with Mormon voters, but likely could have banked on Democratic rival Hillary Clinton's greater unpopularity to keep the state in the win column. It'll be interesting to see where Utah ends up eventually voting, because mm-hmm. so many people hate Hillary and so many people hate Donald Trump. And you've got like Evan McMullen, who's a member of the church, who's kind of running, kind of. You got Gary Johnson, who's libertarian, and a lot of people go, but he likes drugs. We can't do that. It'll be interesting to see where the state of Utah goes.
I think it'll be a lot like, what was it in the mid-90s or early mid-90s?
Ross Perot?
With Ross Perot.
Yeah. He won Utah. Who's Ross Perot in this situation? Johnson or McMullen?
Gary Johnson. Mm. I think more than McMullen, just because his name's out there more. But I don't think it will be the usual clean sweep that it is for.
No. Still Trump?
No.
You don't think?
I really don't think he'll take Utah.
I'm interested to see. And like you said, so excited for it to be done. All right. Do you want, I want you to pick a hand.
Okay.
Right hand, left hand?
Right hand.
Okay. Right hand will be our end. I only got two more stories. Really slow week in the Mormon news. Really slow. Those videos seem to be.
A lot came out last week, so yeah. Slower this week.
This from People magazine. 7 months ago, Eric Dykes, I think is how you say it, was in his car on his way to help his wife calm down from a severe panic attack when his father-in-law delivered the shocking news. Emily Cook Dykes had jumped out of his vehicle on the interstate and ran directly into the path of a semi-truck. She'd been killed instantly. The Salem, Utah mother of five had suffered from postpartum depression for more than a year since the birth of her last child, Trey, but nobody dreamed that her perinatal mood disorder would lead to her death. She'd spent the day with her parents and her dad was driving her home when she became so anxious that she panicked and had to pull over, Eric says. I was on the phone with my father-in-law when she jumped out. After gathering his children around that afternoon to tell them that their mother wouldn't be coming home, Dykes felt strongly that he had to do something in Emily's honor to help other women who suffered from postpartum depression. Several weeks after Emily's memorial service, he started the Emily Effect, a foundation and online help center for women experiencing perinatal mood disorders. Run by Dykes and a small band of volunteers, the organization focuses on directing women to resources, including therapists specializing in postpartum issues and doing away with the stigma that's associated with mental disorders. And then I don't think that I'm going to share this whole story. You can obviously find it at theculturalhall.com. There's a link to it. We have talked a lot about postpartum depression in here. Whether it be the episode that we did on it, you can check that at theculturalhall.com, or whenever we have Lindsay throw your hands up in the ayerts here, she will talk about it. But I will share this. When Emily first started having anxiety and depression, it was maddening to try and find the right help. There were many times when I felt like we'd exhausted all of our options and didn't have anywhere else to turn. Then there was this feeling of self-shaming that Emily had to deal with, he adds. It was that feeling of, we can't see it, so it must not be true. She felt like she was the only one going through this because all of the other moms that she saw were putting their best foot forward, and she felt incredibly alone. She was obviously not alone. When Jenna Christensen, 32, a mother of four, heard about Emily's death from a friend, everything about her story resonated with me. Jenna goes on, I started having postpartum depression after my second child, and by my fourth, I would contemplate driving off a cliff or in front of a truck. It was a daily battle to get up and function. There are other examples that are raised in this People magazine story, but the big thing is, an estimated 15-20% of all women experience postpartum depression and anxiety, making it the number one complication of childbirth. The silver lining is that although women are at risk for mental illness during their reproductive years, they also respond to treatment better than at any other time. I'm in awe of the encouragement and determination of the Dykes family as they work tirelessly to ensure other women do not suffer Emily's fate. The most important message that they are spreading is one of awareness. People can get more information if you go to the Emily Effect. You can just Google search the Emily Effect. There's a link at theculturalhall.com. If this is you, someone that you know, or you'd just like to learn more about postpartum depression or any of those kind of things, you can check that out. Find it at theculturalhall.com. And please reach out. If you've had positive experiences, we would love to hear about those. Contact at theculturalhall.com. And now that leads us perfectly into our last story. You know the hymn, Where Can I Turn for Peace?
Yeah.
Where can I turn for peace? Where is my solace?
Do they sing that in Vegas and lounges?
Yeah. I'm not good enough to do this, but I would love to hear lounge versions of the LDS hymns. If you could hide to Kolob in the twinkling of an eye. How's it going? Have the beef. And then, anyway, where can I turn for peace? Let's get back to it.
Have I ever confessed that, and I thought about this at church yesterday as I sang, or I mouthed the words.
Uh-huh.
I lip-sync.
You don't sing?
The hymns, yeah.
You don't sing? Is this what you're admitting, or is there something beyond this?
No, I'm admitting, because I want the chorister I appreciate her effort and her time put in this, And the organist and everybody there, I appreciate it and I enjoy it, you know, the singing, but I don't sing good, so I don't want to.
Yeah, but what? It doesn't matter. That's the thing that I've never understood about people like yourself then. Like, it doesn't matter.
I'm mouthing. I have the book open. I'm mouthing
right.
All the words.
And I appreciate that effort because there are some people who just don't.
Yeah.
They make zero effort about it.
I don't like that at all.
But, like, why not just be like, where can I turn for peace? Where is my solace? Yeah.
Because I think it would detract from the spirit.
Really?
Yeah.
You think it's that bad?
I think it would bother the people in front of me.
Okay.
Like a cat being squeezed at the neck.
Wow. All right. Where can I turn for peace? The LDS hymn... with text by Emma Lou Thane and music by Jolene G. Meredith, was actually created as part of their mutual calling as members of the Young Women's General Board. The year? 1971, there was to be a special young women's conference. Whatever song Thane and Meredith created would be performed as the closing number. Little did anyone realize that the assignment would be a release for Thane, who was going through a difficult time. As she related in a broadcast, here's the story. The words to the hymn came for me out of a troubled time for our family. We had one daughter ill. That's not the name. The daughter was not healthy. Thank you. We had one daughter ill. I was facing a spinal fusion and interruption of teaching mid-quarter at the University of Utah. My husband was about to become bishop of the student ward, and four daughters were under the age of 17 with busy lives. Pray at night, plan in the morning had been the byword of our family. Now it became pray all the time. The illness that her daughter had? A mental illness, which pianist Meredith was also facing. Once Thane had written down some words, she called up Meredith, who began playing the piano. By the end of their telephone conversation, the basic hymn was done. We determined that this was a mental illness hymn. Meredith would go on to say when telling the story behind the hymn, Emma was struggling with a mental illness of one of her daughters at the time this was written, and I was struggling myself, personally, with mental illness. And so we lovingly call it the Mental Illness Hymn. Where Can I Turn for Peace was officially added to the LDS hymnal in 1985 and continues to be a beacon of hope for all who hear it. If you've never heard the hymn or are just dying to listen to it, you can find a link to it at theculturalhall.com. That's courtesy of the folks over at LDS Daily. But Where Can I Turn for Peace? The writers call it the Mental Illness Hymn.
Interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
I think I want to start including that when I remember in these episodes to take kind of a look at the various hymns. Because that to me, I don't know. It adds some meaning, some depth to when I sing.
Really changes that hymn.
Right? It's really cool.
I think we accidentally
fell into an inspirational end of this episode.
I know. How weird is that?
Especially with me and you. We hope that this episode... Oh. What?
Nothing.
What?
Don't know if that comment was
necessary.
Right.
Come on.
All
look
right.
at us.
I know, but I'm trying to
defend it.
Yeah.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
We hope if you're sick or afflicted or ill, you're well and you can listen next week.
And then when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go.
Time, we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.